Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we will focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Ampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire.
Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 20, and we have another special guest with us today. We're excited to welcome our friend and colleague, Corinne McKay. Many of you have surely heard of Corinne, but if you haven't, here's a quick introduction. Corinne McKay is an ATA-certified French to English translator and Colorado Court-certified French interpreter based in Boulder, Colorado. She's been a full-time freelancer since 2002, and since 2005, she's written books and taught courses for other freelance translators in addition to her own translation and interpreting work. Corinne's book, How to Succeed as a Freelance Translator, has sold over 12,000 copies and is a go-to reference for freelancers and for university-level translation and interpreting programs. After serving for 7 years on the board of the American Translators Association, including as ATA president from 2017 to 2019, Corinne now focuses on her own work, translating in the areas of international development, corporate communications, and nonfiction books, and interpreting in the Colorado courts and for private law firms. Together with Yves Baudu, Corinne also co-hosts the podcast Speaking of Translation. Welcome, Corinne.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to talk to you guys.
Thanks for joining us, Corinne. We are both longtime listeners of your and Eve's podcast, Speaking of Translation. and of course, we also know you through the American Translators Association, as well as your online courses. And we're super excited to have you with us today.
Me too. Thanks.
So before we start, we felt that we need to acknowledge the difficult time we're all in right now. We are recording this episode in April, early April, but it's going to air a couple of months later. And it's possible that our daily lives are still not back to normal, or at least not the same normal as we had before. It's possible that we're still in a very different situation, even when this episode airs, because of the global pandemic and the financial turmoil we're all experiencing now. So maybe each of us can give a quick update on how we're handling this new reality, what we're up to, and what our thoughts are on maybe sharing a message to our future selves and our colleagues who are listening to this episode in June. So Corinne, why don't you go first?
Yeah, sure. So I think most importantly for everybody to remember that your physical and mental health and your family need to come first right now, and whatever you need to do to take care of those things, you should do. Two things I think if you did not have going into this, you should develop for whatever the next crisis is, which are a diverse business and a business savings account. We're all going to end up feeling this in some way. For myself, my translation work is relatively unaffected, but my interpreting work has gone to almost nothing. A few things over the phone, but that's about it, which I think points to, which I know you guys have talked about before, that diversification in your business can be really beneficial. And if you didn't have a business savings account, this is your message from the universe to establish one. Because I think personally, my plan, if my translation work falls off a cliff at some point, is to tap into my business savings account to pay myself while I write another book. And I think the two tips that I gave to my blog readers, other than read Madalena's blog post about how to cope with coronavirus, because I think she had so much great stuff in there that you guys should put that link in the show notes. And the two other things that I said were, let yourself be sad about the sad things, even if they aren't matters of life and death. I think that the coronavirus is changing life for all of us and taking away things we were really excited about, and it's okay to be sad about that. And to whatever extent you can, try to create sort of a new normal routine so that you're not just like floundering between, you know, the news and Netflix all day. Try to, you know, come up with as much of a new normal routine. And I will say now, you know, when we're recording this, we're about 3 weeks into the coronavirus crisis. And I'd say just this week at my house, it started to feel like, okay, this is just the way that we live now. Rather than going, you know, first you went through like, what, we can't go to movies and restaurants and things like that. Then we can't have people over to our house. Then we have to wear a mask and gloves to go to the grocery store. And I feel like, who knows what it'll feel like when listeners listen to this. But at this point at my house, at least it feels like, okay, this does feel like, you know, sort of the zombie apocalypse in some ways. But it also feels like, right, this is just how we live now. Here you go. So that's me.
Definitely. Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's funny because I think that, and I wrote this in an email to people on my email list as well. And I said, I feel like at the very beginning of all this, it was almost like grieving. In the sense of when you grieve the loss of someone, even though I haven't lost anybody in, you know, from coronavirus, and I don't mean to sound, you know, flippant about anybody who has, but I do think that there's a certain level of being okay with voicing the fact that you are upset about some of the things that haven't worked out. You know, I saw yesterday a translator posted that, you know, just so far this year, a lot of her business strategy has kind of gone out the window because of this pandemic. You know, she wanted to work on an ATA certification through the American Translators Association. Well, all of the sittings for the first part of the year have been canceled, you know.
Or suspended, right.
Right, or suspended. And, you know, there are a few other things as well. And I think that's when it's most important to not only say, okay, I am going to, you know, recognize that this is a letdown, that this is something that has, you know, maybe changed my plans, and it's okay to be upset about it. And I think some people are not voicing some of these things because they realize that other people are in much worse shape. Like they may have a family member with coronavirus. They may have lost, you know, an entire business, like a brick and mortar or something like that. So they want to kind of keep it to themselves. But I think it's important to go ahead and, you know, get that out and not be ashamed of it, because I mean, everybody is affected by this. I think we were talking to Sarah Maria Hasbun in our previous episode, episode 14, about this. And she said, you know, this is one of the few times that everybody is going through something awful and somehow in their own lives because of this pandemic. Everybody
That's
is
so
affected.
True, right.
Yeah.
But other stuff, like we had a horrible, massive flood here in Colorado about, you know, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And like everyone here was affected. But when you talk to people who lived elsewhere, their lives were normal. And that made it seem, you know, less apocalyptic. Whereas now everyone who you talk about is like, how are you? Do you know anyone who's sick? How's your work going? You know, what's it like at where you live? Are you still allowed to leave the house?
You know, right. Do you have enough food for this
week?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And so I think it's important to go ahead and recognize that. But then also, as Corinne said, and you know, I'm a big advocate for diversifying your business. And part of the reason I'm such an advocate is that I had to do that for my own business out of necessity. And I think this is the time where people are doing it now out of necessity or starting to think about it. It's extremely important. It's just smart business in general. So that if one part of your business is suffering, there may be another part to help, you know, move things along. And as Corinne said, have some backup plans in place as well. And for the people who work in certain industries like tourism and hospitality and travel and, you know, all the industries that are really hurting right now, oil and gas, don't forget that these companies need to make a comeback in some way. And so you better be available to them when they need you to start helping them with their translations for marketing. You know, when they're looking to really try to revamp what they can from this crisis and rebuild, they will need translators and interpreters. So I think it's extremely important to not forget that. And I've talked to a few translators actually, who are already thinking of pivoting and how they can market to their clients in those industries when things are up and running again. So I think that that's a really good way to look at it. That's my thoughts. Veronica, what do you think?
I completely agree with you. And I think that for me, this time has been, it hasn't been easy as for everyone else. The first week, maybe the first couple of weeks were definitely sort of, as you said, the different stages of grief, you know, from denial to just like grieving about things we can't do anymore and trying to find the new structure in our day. And then having to homeschool the kids, time for work, do all of the, you know, important things we need to do now to protect our health and so on. I found it necessary to, you know, try to look for smaller joys in every single day and trying to be very creative with the things that I'm learning, you know, I'm getting out of this experience. I told my husband the other day, I think we'll gain some transferable skills from this experience in terms of, you know, having to parent and teach our kids and work, which would be, you know, crisis management, conflict resolution, and emergency preparedness when it comes to, you know,
so true.
little and safe and all of that. So I'm just really taking it a bit at a time. And I think that my goal in all of this is really to take care of my mental health, to learn to be frugal, both in our personal life and in my business, and just trying to be very focused and creative in the time that I have available, which is much less than I used to before. So I'm hoping to come out of this really appreciating the things that I have in life at a larger scale and just trying to be very grateful for what I have and more flexible when it comes to my time and availability and all the other things. So that's my goal for now.
Yes, I can totally understand that too. I agree that it's so important to take things one day at a time. I'm sure we can all relate to that, and we should remember to just keep going easy on ourselves during this time. So now on to today's episode. Corinne, when and how did you start your freelance career?
So I had already earned a bachelor's and a master's degree in French. And actually, during my undergraduate study abroad, I spent a year at the University of Grenoble in France. And we were required to take a translation class, and I loved it. So I came back to the U.S. This makes me laugh to think back on it now. I said to one of my French professors, like, I think I found my calling. I want to be a translator. And my professor, I think, you know, trying to be helpful, but not knowing much about the realities of working as a translator, said to me, well, I don't think that's the greatest idea because number one, I think you need more than one language. I mean, I'm not sure if she was thinking of interpreting at the UN or something like that. It is true that if you have French, you have to have Spanish also, but for other things, not really. And I also think you shouldn't pursue that because computers are going to take that over completely in not that long. And keep in mind, I was a senior in college in 1993. So this is literally like 25 years ago. And we see all of us are still in need now. So I worked as a high school French teacher for 8 years. And then in 2002, my daughter, who's now a senior in high school, was born. And I started researching, like, what is a job where I could work from home and use French? Because I theorized, I think correctly, that French was my most marketable skill. And so I right away was lucky enough to find our very dynamic local association, the Colorado Translators Association, and went to a couple of their events and met some experienced translators who were very encouraging about the prospects in translation. And I like to tell this story to show that everybody has to start somewhere. On the very first day on which I thought of myself as a translator, I sat at our dining room table with my tiny infant daughter on my lap, who was about the size of a loaf of bread at that time, and I cold called translation agencies in Colorado to ask what I needed to do to apply for work with them. And back then, the American Translators Association, I believe that was the last year that they sent out a paper membership directory. And so I also applied to many, many translation companies that I found in the ATA paper membership directory. And I got some work from those, also from trying to get informational interviews with local translation agencies who then I think were more willing to take a chance on a new person who they had met in person. And I tell that story to say, if I started there and with the phone book and the infant and ended up as a successful freelance translator, you too can make that leap. Yeah, that's how I started in the fall of 2002. So I will have been freelancing, which is kind of crazy, 18 years this fall. And yeah, that's how I started.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'd love to see one of those old directories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what does a typical work day look like for you? As much as can be, as can be typical right now.
Right. Are we talking today?
Let's say pre-COVID.
Yeah. So pre-COVID, I live in Boulder, Colorado, which for your international listeners is a college town of about 100,000 people in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains in the west of the U.S. And I live with my husband and my daughter, who's a senior in high school. So unlike most translators, I work at a co-working office. I feel like the rest of the world's dream is to work from home, and I don't do well working from home, except now it's actually going fine because I think what I dislike is being home alone all day. And now that everyone's here, it's actually okay. But so typically my daughter leaves for school at about 8 and I try to leave then to go to my co-working office, which I love. I generally ride my bike there if the weather is good to get some exercise. And I tend to prefer a sort of two-part workday. Maybe this is sort of a holdover habit from when my daughter was younger, but I tend to work from about 8:30 until 3:30 or 4, and then take a break in the afternoon, and then do more work at night if I need to. And I think, that does a couple of things for me. I can be home in the afternoon to hang out with my daughter a little bit if she's here. It gives me some time outside when it's still light outside in the winter. So here, because we're relatively far south, but because of the mountains, it gets dark pretty early. So that allows me to be outside. And I guess I just tend to, prefer that. I don't work on weekends unless absolutely necessary, but that's a pretty typical work day.
Great. And just as a follow-up to that, how would you say that your daily routine has changed, post COVID-19, in the sense of taking it one day at a time? Because I know that you're doing a lot right now, and you're offering a free course right now, which kudos to you. That's
what was I thinking?
I was telling somebody the other day, and I said, this was such a good, an act of goodness, but I don't think you realized at the time that you were going to attract so many people. So
I think
what does it look like right now?
Right. Both of those are true. So right now, I think the thing that we're trying to do at my house is emphasize routine versus schedule. I think right now, all of our lives are in such upheaval that trying to stick to a rigid schedule would, to me, make me feel even more stressed. Like, now I was supposed to walk at 8:15 and I can't do that. And who needs something else to be freaking out about right now? So I think what we're trying to do is emphasize routine. Like, fortunately here, we live near a large trail system and we're still allowed to go outside with no restrictions. So we try to go walk for at least an hour twice a day. I think that those are sort of the, benchmarks in the day now. Mm-hmm. And we try to all have breakfast and dinner together, lunch. It's kind of, everyone for themselves.
Right.
So we have that going on. And then fortunately, the thing that I really, hats off to you guys about, my daughter's 17. And so the idea of me even helping her with school, much less homeschooling, it's like, she's in second year calculus and I never even took calculus 1. So the idea that I could even help her with school, much less homeschool her, is just ludicrous. So fortunately, but I will say that one silver lining, and every time I mention silver linings, I feel like we just have to acknowledge that, this situation is truly horrible for many, many people. But one silver lining is we're getting this big chunk of time together before she leaves for college.
Yeah.
So she's going to go to college on the East Coast next year, which is a huge shift. We've lived in the same house since she was 2. And we've done a lot of traveling, but we're quite close as a family, and she's going to go to college on the East Coast. So I guess that's a positive, is that we're getting this big chunk of time. But right now, we are trying to, really stick to a routine more than a schedule, I'd call it.
Yeah, I think we're doing something similar. And I am trying to walk outside at least an hour a day, but I like the idea of doing it twice a day. That sounds even better.
Yeah, we try to do morning and afternoon. It doesn't happen every day, but we try to do both.
It is tough. I know. Yeah, it's like that one day at a time right now.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. So going back to the topic of our podcast, which is all about smart habits, can you tell us what smart habits have been crucial in your career overall? You know, not at this point in time exactly, mm-hmm. but in general.
Yeah. So I think for me, the sort of overarching idea would be take all of the advice from the experts and then craft it into your own version mm-hmm. of what sort of the free in freelancing means to you.
Right.
So I think, you know, to me, like as a freelancer, especially in the US where we have to pay pretty significant self-employment tax, but get greatly reduced access to government benefits such as, you know, unemployment insurance as compared to someone with a salaried job, you have to have some sort of internal motivation to develop a successful freelance business, because I think that there are, you know, I don't want to say barriers, but, you know, when people say, joking but not joking, like being a freelancer means working 60 hours a week for yourself so you don't have to work 40 hours a week for someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, I sort of hesitate to repeat that because one of my personal free in freelance things is I don't work 60 hours a week.
Right. Yeah.
But
exactly.
Yeah, but I think the point being, for example, when I think a huge tip I would give people is do not apologize for what your priorities are. So, for example, when my daughter was little, one of my main reasons for freelancing was to be able to spend more time with her than if I had a salaried job. And I really did that at the expense of my own sanity. So we never used any childcare outside of school, which I now look back on and think, like, how and why did we do that? But I also think, you know, the old ladies in the grocery store who tell you, like, you know, they don't call it the longest, shortest time for nothing. And yeah. Someday you'll realize that, like, really the days are long and the years are short. Like, you can't go back and put your childhood, your kid's childhood back in the tube, but you have the rest of your life, you know, once they leave home. Mm. It didn't feel like that when my daughter was three and I was, mm-hmm. you know, I worked in the evenings pretty much 7 days a week when she was in preschool. It didn't feel like that at the time, but it sure does now. You know, yeah. that I think someone else who made the opposite choice and said, you know, what makes me feel fulfilled and have no regrets is having my kids in full-time childcare so that when I'm with them, I'm not a stressed out maniac. You know? Like, yeah. I think the point there is there aren't any wrong choices. They're simply crafting the kind of life you want because of the free in freelance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Definitely. Yeah. You know, I think you're a great example for many people in terms of you work really hard and you're really focused on what you're doing. So even if you know how many hours a week you spend on your business, it seems like you're like for the outsider, I think for me personally, it seems like you're spending way more because you're doing so many things. So, kudos.
Well, yeah. And I mean, this sounds sort of simplistic, but I think it's important. I like being busy. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not someone who needs a lot of downtime. And I actually find that I enjoy having a lot of things, different things going on because I think it's easier to stay motivated.
Yeah.
Like this is sort of a Colorado analogy, but I think it'll make sense that someone said to me once, it's a lot easier to train for a triathlon than it is to run a marathon because there are three things you have to talk yourself out of doing rather than just one. And I think in your business, those are true, that now that I have really like translation, interpreting, my online courses, writing books, I feel like I'm not spread so thin that I feel like I'm all over the place, but there's always something that can captivate my interest. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be a better way to put it.
Well, we're kindred spirits. I feel like that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know for some people it's hard actually to have more than one thing going on and they can't imagine. But for me, I can't imagine not having lots of things going on.
Yep, me too.
Interesting.
Yeah, me too.
So let's talk about one particular habit that can be helpful for many freelancers. It's creating professional partnerships. Mm-hmm. And we think you have some good tips to share there. So how do you determine the types of professional partnerships you want to create or build?
Yeah. So I guess my very first one would be that my colleague Eve Boda and I, who host Speaking of Translation together, have worked together doing translation editing, and working on the podcast and stuff like that really since the dawn of our freelance businesses. So we actually met at an international networking event that was the first time I went out alone after my daughter was born. So after like the desperate search for something relatively businesslike that I could fit into, I went to this networking event and there was Eve with her teeny tiny son. So we have kids who are exactly a month apart in age. Wow. My daughter is September 19th and her oldest son is October 19th. So wow. I immediately went up to her and said, "Oh my gosh, I have a daughter who's almost the same age. He was in a baby Bjorn in her coat. That's how small he was." And that's how we met. So, so we've been doing that. And then obviously I do a lot of webinars and online courses with other people. And now I hire a lot of external instructors to teach online courses for my online course platform. So what I think I've done is try to find people with complementary skills. So people who have similar values in their business to what I have, but who are good at things that I am not good at. And I think one thing that I think is super important for any partnership is to be self-aware. So for example, I think I am a pretty laid-back person about lots of things, but I am pretty not laid-back about work. So, you know, one example I give is, you know, in almost 15 years of teaching online courses, I've only had to last minute cancel one session, which was because my husband was in the emergency room. Oh. Wow. But I also am not that person who is going to tear my hair out if the course description has a typo that like three people noticed. You know, I just think that I'm someone who sort of picks my battles, but I am pretty perfectionistic about work. And so those are things that I kind of look for. And I think another thing I wanted to inject into some of your questions are, years ago, Eve and I actually did a presentation at the ATA conference on translation partnerships, where we interviewed like six different pairs of translators who worked together. So even though that information is from a while ago, I thought I would, you know, add some of that in because it was super interesting to sort of see under the hood of people's translation partnerships. And what I mean about self-awareness is we interviewed two guys who did Japanese to English translation who were translation partners, and they both said, "You know why we get along? We're both in this for the money." Like, we are here to do the work and do it well and then go do something else. And I just thought, you know what, that's great because it worked for them. You know, they had this hugely successful Japanese to English financial translation partnership, and both of them said, "This isn't my passion. This isn't something that changes the world. This is what I do to make a lot of money, and I'm good at it, and I do it well, and then I go do other things I want to do in life." And that to me is like what self-awareness means, you know?
Yeah. Very interesting.
So do you create some structure around the partnership right away, or do you just see how it pans out? Like, I like you. I think we fit well together. Let's see how we can work together.
So I create what I would call, when I was, you know, thinking ahead of this interview, it sort of forced me to think through this too, which was a good exercise. I would call it a deliberate lack of structure. So for example, Eve and I have no formal business relationship. All we do is pay the other person for what they did. So for example, it doesn't matter. We don't divide money based on who found the client, who the client contacted first. We just sort of say, you know, I did the translation and here's how much that pays, and you did the editing and here's how much that pays. And same thing with my online course instructors. I tell them, and I'll talk a little bit later about, you know, payment structure, but I tell them, here's what you're agreeing to do. Teach this class and do it really well. Yeah. And if you decide that later you want to teach the class on your own, if you want to pitch your consulting services, you know, obviously in a non-pushy way, but if you want to offer individual consulting to the people in the class, that's fine. I don't need a cut of that. And I think one thing I would say is that has actually worked really, really well for me, the deliberate non-structure, mm-hmm. where you sort of say, like, it's purely transactional. Like, obviously, I'm friends with a lot of the people who work for me, but mm-hmm. that sort of purely transactional nature has actually worked really well for me, because I feel like there's no emotional or legal or reputation obligation other than that, you know, teaching that class, editing that translation, doing that webinar, things like that.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I think it's important, because sometimes when you make something a little too formal, things can become rather complicated when maybe they don't need to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how do you make sure that it's a mutually beneficial relationship? And we kind of touched on that a little bit already, but what do you mm-hmm. think is sort of the secret sauce to success there?
Yeah. So I think one thing I do that's maybe a little bit different than how other people do it is with anybody who I'm going to have any sort of partnership, whether it's me giving a webinar for them, them teaching an online class for me, you know, editing or translating for someone, is to be totally transparent about the financial part, because I think that's where a lot of negative feelings happen. Right. You know, that you think, like, this person hired me to edit their translation. And, you know, I quoted my normal editing rate, but then I found out that it's this super high profile client that actually pays double what they charge anyone else, and I feel a little taken advantage of. Mm. So I feel like everyone has to work it out their own way, because I feel like I also talk pretty openly about how much I charge and how much I earn. And undoubtedly, there are people who think that's weird and tacky. I mean, I hate saying that, but I'm sure it's true. Whereas my feeling is, number one, if I'm giving other people business advice, I think they should know the perspective that I'm coming from. They should know what I actually charge and what I actually earn. But for example, with my online course instructors, I tell them, here's how much I charge for the class, here's how much I'm paying you, because I feel like that sort of allows me to, for example, say, the students in this class are paying for a premium experience, and I'm mm-hmm. paying you what I hope is a premium rate to deliver that premium experience. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're yeah. teaching for a university, the students might be paying what seems like a premium rate, but the instructor is really making, you know, $18 an hour when yep. it comes down to it.
That's right.
And one thing I tell my course instructors, or and sometimes I even tell students that, like, it's okay to ask a lot of this instructor, because they're getting paid a premium rate to teach this class. So I think mm-hmm. transparency is one of my things, but I also want to put it out there that some people might find that sort of oversharing. And I feel like I'm not an oversharer normally, but that I do feel like when you give business advice to people, that kind of overshare, what might seem like oversharing about the financials, to me is sort of due diligence, transparency, you know?
Yeah. I agree. I think that's important. And that's a smart habit to keep. Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what kinds of habits, other habits, do you think are important for keeping partnerships going and making mm-hmm. them successful over the long term?
Yeah. So I think one thing that I would say, even though I'm a pretty conflict averse person, is be honest about what's working and what's not working and what the parameters are. So for example, at the outset, Eve and I sort of said to each other, like, if you have other clients that you don't want me to translate or edit for, that's fine. And no hurt. We make a rule that we don't get hurt feelings if we find out, like, you translated a book and you didn't ask me to edit it. And so I think I would say, if people have a, like, ongoing partnership, like, if I were going to give you guys some amateur psychotherapy advice about your podcast, it's maybe to say, like, let's have what you might call a, like, rose and thorn meeting every month. Like, mm-hmm. tell me one thing that's going great and one thing that you wish you could change, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so then I think if you do it in a structured way, it's not weird to say to the other person, you know, well, here are all of these things that are going great. And if I'm honest, I feel like you kind of talk over me sometimes, mm-hmm. or I feel like mm-hmm. you, I mean, that I just feel like one thing I found helpful is to say to people, like, let's just do a debrief and talk about what went well and what you wish you could do differently, rather than saying, if I'm doing something that bugs you, tell me, like, who's going to do that? You
know? Right. Yeah.
That's for true. Example, like a couple of years ago, one of my online course instructors did tell me that they thought that I overtalked them. And I really like took that advice to heart. And now I just mute myself. But I think that came from saying, you know, let's just do a like rose and thorn debrief here. And you tell me what went well and what would you do differently next time? So that's one tip.
Yeah. And a lot of that is based on personalities, really, because, you know, what one partnership things might, you know, work really well a certain way. And with others, a different personality, it doesn't work as well. Mm-hmm. Like I remember I was giving a Q&A session in the copywriting course I teach for you. And I was like, Corinne, what do you think? Like, I like the other person to chime in, but I can see how some people wouldn't care for that as much. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. But I think for people who have a sort of close ongoing partnership, maybe you even make a rule. You're not allowed to tell me that everything is perfect and nothing needs to change. Like when we have our debrief meeting, you have to say at least one thing that you think we should do differently. You know, maybe do that so that it makes it less intimidating.
That's a great habit. I like that.
Yeah, I love it. I like that for, you know, ongoing partnerships. I like the idea of having it as a routine, you know, as part of things you do once a month or whatever other schedule works for you. I know when I had a corporate job and I worked on projects, we would often have, when a project was over, we would have like a postmortem or a wrap-up meeting where everyone could share openly things they thought worked great and things that didn't work so well. And now working on localization projects, I often have clients, I see that they organize those meetings, and that's great. You know, for me as a translator, I'm always like, wow, you know, it's amazing to be a part of it and have a chance to say something. I like the idea of doing it for partnerships with colleagues too. So speaking of, you know, conflict resolution and just maybe things not going so well, how do you know if and when it's time to end a partnership? And it's not, you know, to sound negative, but it could be a concern for people who don't know how to speak up and handle a situation like this.
So first of all, and perhaps this is just me, but I would be pretty wary of creating a formal business partnership with anyone. Because I think if you own a company together, dissolving that is really like getting a divorce. I mean, I think it could be as emotionally and financially traumatic as getting a divorce. And I just think it's also relatively rare that two people have exactly the same expectations of how they want an all-consuming business to go. You know, like when you think of, because I think for us, it's sort of important to acknowledge that our freelance businesses are not just a job, it's part of our identity. Like I would say for me, that is not an exaggeration to say that being self-employed is part of my identity. And that I would be really wary of saying, for example, now I'm going to merge my entire translation business with someone else. And I will say for the record, when Eve and I did our interviews with the various translation partners, we couldn't talk about it openly, but there were two sets of people who had been best friends in real life, merged their translation businesses, and ended up not speaking to each other. Like that's how badly it shook out. So I would be very wary of forming a formal partnership with anyone. And I think I learned a lot of things from being on the ATA board and especially being ATA president, because I was never a boss of anyone in a regular job. The regular jobs I had, you know, the salary jobs I had before I was a translator, I was never anybody's boss. And being ATA president, you're the boss of a lot of people. And the two rules that I learned when I was ATA president about, you know, sort of bad news or conflict-ridden conversations, number one, it shouldn't come as a surprise to the other person. And number two, the other person shouldn't feel humiliated. So like if you're telling someone you want to dissolve a partnership, it should not come out of nowhere. I think you should have been saying to them, you know, in your rose and thorn conversations, like, well, you know, this is hard to say, but on the last editing job that you did for me, I actually found several errors that you didn't catch. And I think, you know, mm-hmm. we had talked about that was the reason that I hire you is because I feel like you're a much better editor than I am. So number one, it shouldn't come to this as a surprise. And the other person like should get to keep their dignity. you know, they shouldn't feel humiliated. And I also feel like another thing I learned as ATA president is as much as you can sort of stick to the facts, or like sometimes people say, don't make judgments, make observations, that I think that can be really helpful. And I think as well, realize that sometimes things turn weird no matter how hard you try. I mean, I won't give details, but I've had situations like that too. I think I consider myself a pretty easy person to get along with. And yeah. I've also had situations where it turned weird, no matter how hard I, and presumably the other person, for the record, tried, it still turned weird. And I think when you're someone who thinks, you know, it could enhance my business to be working with other people, that's sort of a risk that you have to accept as well.
Yeah, right. So finally, what advice would you give to other freelance translators who want to build partnerships with colleagues?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as much as all of us are successfully self-employed because our personality lends itself to that, like, you know, when I started freelancing, my mom said to me, well, for better or worse, you've always loved to be in charge. But I do think as someone who has sort of, you know, branched out into different partnership arrangements, you also have to say, we're in this job because we like to help people and solve problems. Mm-hmm. And that if you see a way that working with other people could help you help more people and solve more problems, then I think it's a good way to push your comfort zone. Like one thing, you know, I live in a very sports-oriented household, so we use a lot of sports metaphors. And one thing that my daughter taught me that she learned from her mountain biking coaches is two things. You don't make progress in the comfort zone. And the only way never to be disappointed is never to try.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I think those two things are really true. And for me, so earlier this year, I did a couple of webinars for Janae Spry, who a lot of people probably know through her translation business coaching. And for me, that was like a whole new world. Like, I like doing online sessions with like 9 people on them. And all of a sudden, you know, Janae's like, you know, we have 100 people on the live session and we send the recording to 600. And for me, I found, wow, that did really, really good things for my business to do that. And it did push my comfort zone. And I was afraid of doing that. But I think, you know, again, if you see areas in your business where you could solve more problems, help more people, whether for you that is, you know, through directly doing translation or doing, you know, business coaching and things like that, that it is good to get out of your, you know, silo. And same thing, like Madalena said this, you know, at the start of the COVID crisis, I thought, well, what can I do to help? And I thought like, okay, I bet that there are a lot of people out there now who are either thinking about doing freelance translation work or existing translators who want to improve their business. And maybe I could come up with some sort of MOOC, you know, massive open online course style version of my Getting Started as a Freelance Translator course. I thought 75 to 100 people would sign up and 900 sign up. And that's only because I cut the registration off at 900 because I thought like, I just can't handle this anymore. So, but I also think then, speaking of partnering, I recruited 18 people, including happily both of you, to serve as mentors in that class. And I think right now it does feel overwhelming, but if you got, if you, you know, you guys probably look in the Slack group and think, wow, here are all of these people who maybe never would have had access to any sort of training on how to become a freelance translator. Like I know, you know, Veronica's connected with people like out in the wilds of Russia who are like, I always sort of knew that this freelance translation thing could exist. And now here I am. So I think to me, that's sort of a, you know, a good example of what partnering with other people can do for you, that when that class, you know, exploded, I thought, there's no way I can do this myself. Yeah. And that people were willing and even eager to step up. And that I think it's getting all of us out of our comfort zone and seeing this is how you solve more problems, help more people, is by working together.
Yes, I agree with that. Corinne, thank you so much for answering our questions and for sharing these great tips with our listeners. And as our listeners already know, we like to share various resources and some habits that we're working on. Corinne has graciously agreed to join us with this today as well. So Corinne, what would you like to share with our listeners?
So I wanted to give you a resource that I wanted to share with everyone. So as you guys mentioned, I recently did some intensive training to pass the court interpreter certification exam, which was a huge challenge. Talk about out of the comfort zone. Huge challenge for me. And now having passed the exam, I'm doing lots of stuff to up my skills. And I wanted to recommend a course through an online training company called InterpreTrain. So of the three interpreting skills that you have to do on the court interpreting exam, simultaneous, consecutive, and sight translation, consecutive is by far my weakest, and my big hang up is note taking. So, you know, having not done like an interpreting master's program, I really needed to bump up my consecutive note taking skills. And so InterpreTrain has a really awesome online, it's self-paced, so you can start it whenever, on consecutive interpreting and specifically note taking. And you do audio exercises that get, you know, longer and more complicated. You learn symbols. Like, I never learned symbolic note taking. And at a certain point, I mean, unless you learned, you know, shorthand or something in a previous life, there's only so much you can do in consecutive until you learn symbolic note taking. So yeah, InterpreTrain's consecutive note taking course, thumbs up on that. And then for Book Nook, a book I'm reading right now. So Yves Baudeux, my translation colleague, started an online book club for translators, and she recommended a book, or the first book was a book called, appropriately enough, The Translator by Nina Schuyler. And I am so not a fiction reader. I read almost exclusively nonfiction, and I loved this book. And then I wanted to just give a plug for, like I said, I barely ever read fiction, but one fiction series I got obsessed with is the Henry VIII trilogy by Hilary Mantel. She's a British author, and she's either the only author or the only woman to win the Booker Prize twice. I can't remember which one.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway, so she wrote this trilogy of books that are set in the Henry VIII era. I don't even like historical fiction, and listening to the audiobook of the second volume of the trilogy is the only time I've ever run out of gas in the car. I was driving from Colorado to Utah on the sort of, you know, lonely nowhere highway, and I actually ran the car out of gas because I was so entranced. And the third volume in the trilogy, which is called The Mirror and the Light, came out at the beginning of March. So that's been part of my sanity during the quarantine. So there you go.
Wow. Wonderful. Oh my goodness. Okay. So for me, one of the habits that I'm working on right now is reading more when I'm not working. And this is a habit that I continuously work on just because I have all the good intentions to read. And then I get busy or tired at the end of the day and I can read only just a little bit. But I do read both fiction and nonfiction, and I'll talk about what I'm reading right now in a moment. But one of the habits that I'm trying to build more is to read in my second and third languages, so Portuguese and Spanish, and not so much fiction or nonfiction books, although I do have a stack to read that I have accumulated. But actually from websites, maybe not necessarily at this time, like major news sites, because we know that all of the news right now is related to the pandemic, and that can be quite draining if that's all you're reading. Yeah. But there is a wonderful website in Brazil. We'll have to share it in the show notes, but essentially the abbreviation is FAPESP. And they have wonderful articles that are written in Portuguese on various topics. And then they've been translated as well. So it's very interesting to go and read the translations of the articles. And they range from everything, you know, topics on the rainforest to, you know, anatomy, to just like all kinds of things. So yeah, that's something I'm trying to work on, is reading more in my second and third languages. And
cool.
Thanks to Eve's book, that's very helpful, which we can also link for anybody who's not read Eve's book yet. And then what I'm reading for fun right now is actually another psychological thriller. I've shared one before on our podcast, but this is the third book by Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen, and it's called You Are Not Alone. And they are New York Times bestselling authors of the book I previously mentioned, which is Life Between Us. They just write so well. And what I like about them, and I've said this before, but unlike other, you know, pairs of authors, they actually write each line of the book together, which is,
oh wow,
yeah, it's really unusual. So they're the kind of folks that are used to working remotely. They don't live in the same place, and they work 6 to 8 hours a day when they're writing their books together online writing. And then they meet once a month to kind of map it out, you know, how they want the story to go. But something I thought was interesting is that this book came out, what, the very beginning of March. And they started their book tour and then they had to cancel it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they announced at the time when they canceled it that there was somebody who was putting up a website for all those people who had written and launched books in March and April. They were going to try to, you know, showcase them on this website and how to find it so we can share it. You know, because those people aren't going to get to do book tours right now. So it's important to, you know, promote and share what, you know, what you can with independent authors. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Veronica?
I can relate to you wanting to work in your habit of reading, because that's what I'm working on right now too. And it's really hard. I find that I realized with the situation going on right now is I realized how much my habits depended on the structure of my day. And now that the structures...
Now that there's zero structure.
And there's... a lot of non-negotiables right now that are very new to our routine. And I find myself reading more books with kids. So I can't report on some new grown-up adult book that I've read recently. I'm still kind of wading through one from a
month ago.
How's
the Magic Treehouse going?
Right. Well, now my older one is old enough to read Harry Potter. So that's something I'm enjoying with her. Yeah. But I've downloaded an app on my phone called Habit Share. And it's set up in a way where, that you can add your friends and you can sort of keep each other accountable on habits. But I'm just using it in sort of a private mode just for myself. And you can add any habits you'd like and how often you want to do these things. And then you kind of tick it off whenever you've done it. So I have reading, like 15 minutes of reading a day at least. You know, I have exercise and you can set up how long you want to do that. And I have like a morning yoga. So that's how I try to keep myself accountable and, you know, actually do some things for me and not just for everyone else. And as for a tool that I've been using a lot lately, I actually have to give a shout out to Alexander Drexel from colleagues' podcast, The Troublesome Terps. Mm-hmm. He has responded to our episode on decluttering, episode 11, and recommended an app called Gemini that helps organize your photo library on your phone and your iPad. And I downloaded it right away. And it's amazing. Like it connects, it syncs your entire photo library on your device and it sorts the photos into blurred screenshots, videos, duplicates, and similar.
I need that. I love it.
And a good thing is that, I mean, you can set it up to where it sends you notifications and reminders like once a week or whatever about taking a minute to delete some photos, or you can like avoid that setting if you're annoyed by alerts and reminders from your phone. But I find it helpful. And I love that it groups the photos for you into these categories, because I don't have to, you know, go through that. Oh, I'm going to clean up my photo library. And then like 30 minutes later, I'm looking at pictures from a year ago and I forgot what I was doing, you know? So just this morning I went ahead and I deleted like 750 screenshots from my phone and I felt amazing. It was just one click of a button.
Great.
So thank you so much, Alexander. This was a gem.
You know, what's funny about this is that I was the one who actually said I had the problem with the photos and you're the one that downloaded the app. So. Yeah. Well, apparently I need to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us today, Corinne.
Thank you guys for inviting me. This was a wonderful break in the day, and I really enjoy your podcast as a listener as well.
Thank you. And we love yours as well, too. It's been really nice to have you today, and we hope that our listeners enjoy our conversation, too. But before we go, can you share with us where everybody can find you or find you online?
Yeah, sure. So my main website that your listeners would be interested in is trainingfortranslators.com. That's where my blog and my online courses are. And I'm on Twitter at Corinne McKay. Those are my two main things.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, we'll add those links to our show notes as well as the link to your podcast as well.
Awesome. Speakingoftranslation.com. I put the episodes on my blog, but if you want to go directly, yeah, speakingoftranslation.com.
So that's it for this week's episode. We'll be sending our email subscribers a summary of today's episode with a link to the show notes so you can quickly find all the resources that we mentioned today. And if you'd like to receive it, please sign up for our emails on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And make sure that you check out Corinne's blog and the podcast that she co-hosts with our colleague Yves Baudu, Speaking of Translation. Our next episode will come out on June 30th. So if you want to know about the topics of our episodes before they're released, be sure to subscribe to our emails.
Thank you so much, Corinne.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered a simple strategy that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover on this podcast, please record a quick voice message and email it to us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, please leave us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts, and please share the podcast with other translators you know.